Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
That last laughter, he finally got it. If they ever do a remake of The Shadow for TV, radio, or the movies, call Nick Redfern. Not me. I didn't do it. But what Nick did was write this book called The Pyramids and the Pentagon, and it's worth it. It's from New Page Books, which publishes a lot of information about the paranormal and UFOs, with Gene and Chris. And we were exploring here all sorts of interesting possibilities about the crypto-terrestrials. And that takes us back to the alien form of communication using rocks and things. And I was thinking of Richard Shaver, the Deros and Tiros, the under-earth people, and rock books. Are we getting back to that now?
Well, you know, we could be. I mean, Shaver's story was highly controversial. You know, it's not everybody who claims to get messages through the welding gun, you know. You know what I mean?
And there's also reason to say, well, maybe Ray Palmer exploited Shaver, considering him just some kind of lunatic who could put together stories that he could rewrite and sell books.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's something we need to remember. Ray Palmer, who actually sort of co-wrote The Coming of the Flying Saucer with Kenneth Arnold, you know, Ray Palmer was sort of responsible for bringing the man who created Flying Saucer, if you like, Kenneth Arnold, into the book world, you know. So he played a historic role in the UFO field.
Of course, but Palmer also has a shaky or a questionable reputation. Now, you might remember the late Otto Binder. Now, Otto Binder was somebody who wrote comic books like Captain Marvel. He wrote science fiction novels, a very close friend to Ray. And I knew him. This is back in the 60s and 70s. I forget what year he died. And he told me one time that Ray Palmer was never above writing things just to get reader reaction. And certainly we also hear from Jerome Clark, our favorite UFO historian, who worked for Fate magazine when the Fullers were running it, and they didn't have very kind things to say about Ray Palmer.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing to remember is that Palmer, you know, was also an editor of a, you know, massively selling science fiction magazine, which sold even more copies when he got Richard Shaver on board, and people just got fascinated and obsessed by this story of the Deros and these sort of vast underground realms and cities. Now, it doesn't mean there's not anything to them, but Palmer, as the editor, his role was basically to get subscribers, to get readers, and get more and more and more.
He had to basically sell magazines. He was there to make the magazine fascinating, compelling, sell magazines. Yeah. And parenthetically, by the way, the final stories about John Carter of Mars, remember that movie? Yeah. They were published in Amazing Stories by Ray Palmer. He got the final works by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
And, of course, the other important thing to remember is that, you know, if we look at what Palmer said about the Deros and Shaver's story, you know, there's no evidence that Palmer ever dug deeply into anything to try and verify it. What he basically did was encourage Shaver to tell his stories, send them in, and then Palmer would publish them. It's not so much like he lied and hid that he knew what was going on, really, et cetera, et cetera. He just asked the stuff to be sent in and published it. You know, I don't see any evidence that he did any sort of investigation to verify it or not.
He was basically interested in a good story, telling a good story in a science fiction magazine. I guess the big concern would be, was he also telling good stories when he had supposedly factual magazines?
Well, yeah, that's the big question. You know, it's like, has somebody crossed the line from one to the other and not made it clear? I mean, some people do this, you know, people like Gray Barker, people say Gray Barker's work was fiction, a lot of it, but I would view it more as like gonzo journalism, where he took real events, real cases and real people and had interesting ideas and thoughts he wanted to get across. So he spun it in the form of like a gonzo story. But a lot of people, they don't like gonzo type journalism because it confuses them. It's like, well, is it fiction? Is it fact? Is he lying? It's its own unique genre where you're telling truths in a sort of semi parable fictional way, you know, whether it's Hunter S. Thompson with Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or Jack Kerouac with On the Road. On the Road is a novel, but it's based on real events.
And it's almost like a subjective, very highly subjective form of journalism. Listen, we have so much ground to cover and not always enough time. Chris, you got some more questions?
Well, we have a question from Angelo, one of the moderators at forum.theparacast.com. He's kind of our skeptical side. We do try to keep a good, well-balanced perspective on the forums. And Angelo asks, Nick, how do you keep track of everything you research? Is there anything you've ever written about that you have completely changed your mind about? So I guess that's a two-parter.
In terms of keeping track of everything, you know, you do what I think most people do, which is just preserve everything. You know, you file it in the good old days in filing cabinets, and today, you know, you keep it on your hard drive, you know, or you just put it on a thumb drive or whatever. So that's how I keep track of everything. In terms of, you know, if my views have changed, I mean, I've actually written books where I've specifically said, this is a fascinating story. It's fascinating what the person's telling, but I don't believe a word of it. I mean, for example, my 2010 book, Final Events, this was a study of a group in the Pentagon that analyzed the UFO phenomenon and came to the conclusion that the entire mystery is literally demonic. And when I say literally demonic, I mean like heaven and hell, Armageddon, the devil, horns, forked tail, demonic.
The harvest of souls.
Now, I don't believe that at all, but I didn't write the book to promote that theory. I wrote the book because I thought it was fascinating that there was a group in government that believed this, that was funded to address this issue, came to the conclusion, and actually influenced a lot of powerful people in government. It was a fascinating story, but I made clear it was a fascinating story that I didn't endorse in terms of the conclusion. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the things I write about, I'm not telling a story that I'm supporting. I'm telling the story of why other people may believe it. I mean,
now, being a journalist, you're not expressing an opinion one way or the other.
Well, no, I am expressing an opinion. I think the demonic theory is complete bull.
Now, the other thing about it here is it seems to me that maybe the government, especially in the 40s and 50s, are busy exploring German technology, and they start getting into real flaky stuff, such as ESP and all this other stuff. Was it, again, because they were so flush with personnel from the war and they needed to do things, or maybe they wanted to figure out what the Germans were doing? They got into all sorts of areas that they don't do now. So what about today? Looking at the current Pentagon, do you think they're still doing wacky stuff behind the scenes?
Well, I think they are. But
the amount of money they have, Gene, they're doing everything under the sun and probably way more.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing of it is, of course, the reason why we get a better picture of the past is because certain things have come out through the Freedom of Information Act. Certainly post 9/11, although there's still a FOIA in place, you know, it's becoming harder and harder to get material, despite the fact that, you know, the government claims it's making things easier. And of course, you know, it's need to know is becoming more sort of a clampdown issue and things like this. So, you know, if logic dictates, if in the 50s there were research in ESP and animals and Noah's Ark and the Dead Sea Scrolls, in the 60s and 70s remote viewing through the 80s, 90s, you know, we see evidence of the Air Force going back and looking at Roswell again and all this different stuff. You know, logic dictates that there must be more going on, and probably a great deal that we haven't, you know, even begun to uncover. I mean, the stuff that I talked about in Final Events with the Collins Elite and the demonic stuff, there are a few fragments of that. The story came to me from this guy, Ray Beauchesne, who interviewed, or was actually had a meeting with a couple of these guys who were working on this demonic UFO project. You know, he had face-to-face meetings with him. That's why I wrote the book, because, you know, he was the impetus for the story. And that was as late as the early 1990s, when the government was sort of dabbling into everything from like Jack Parsons and, you know, conjuring up golems and all sorts of stuff, supposedly. So.
Oh, I love the way they just take our money and do weird things. I guess part of it is that it would be nice if sometimes they actually had some meaningful result. That would be more fun.
Well, I think the thing is, you know, when we look at these stories, I actually think, unfortunately from our perspective, the ones we hear more about are the ones that were tossed to one side where, but not always, but, you know, where something was, they hoped that they were going to achieve something but didn't, and so the file was closed, and then, of course, it comes up through, you know, declassification. I actually think the ones where, wow, they really achieved something, you know, that just went black, and those are the ones we don't hear about. So I don't think it's a case of, they just never achieved anything and it was all a waste of time. We only see the ones, I think, that were a waste of time, or we just get snippets and fragments, like with the Ararat anomaly, which I don't think was a waste of time at all.
This is never a waste of time because we have Nick Redfern aboard on the PowerCast. We're talking about his book, The Pyramids and the Pentagon. With Gene and Chris, you're always in
the PowerCast.
That one stunned me into silence.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive PowerCast things that you can buy We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock, save you money, and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris, we have Nick Redfern. The book is The Pyramids and the Pentagon. And we covered some of your questions. Others we pretty much covered on the show. We'll get to more of the book. It is just fascinating. Always a great read from Nick Redfern. He puts it together. There is one subject here I'd like to get into. We've been talking about ancient history, the Philadelphia experiment, the Pentagon's experiments, and from time to time we've talked about the Martian mysteries. And I guess because just this past week I finally saw the movie John Carter, based on the Edgar Rice Burroughs novel, A Princess of Mars, about somebody, an Earthman, going to Mars and seeing the remnants of a civilization that was dying, different races and everything.
So how was it? Was it good? Did you like it?
It's a great movie. It got average reviews, but it's really bad because Walt Disney did not have a clue how to promote this story. Because if you look at the story of John Carter, I recommend you stream it, you rent it, whatever. Take a look and then think of how Avatar was influenced. Think about the fact that this story was influenced by the story of Pocahontas and John Smith and everything. Think about all the influences to science fiction that came from a novel written in 1912 by Edgar Rice Burroughs before he wrote Tarzan. Really fascinating. Let's go to Mars. The face on Mars and the pharaohs? What kind of resemblance or connection do we find there?
Well, again, this is, you know, sort of at the, I guess really at the far end, you know, some of the more extreme conspiracy theories as they relate to ancient civilizations on Earth. You know, I mean, everybody has heard of the face on Mars. Even NASA, you know, admits there is a face on Mars, but their position is that it's not a carved face. They kind of view it as the equivalent of people seeing faces in clouds. You know, that's their official stance on it, that it yes, it looks like a face, but that doesn't mean it is a face.
Bedelia?
You know, yeah, exactly. Now, a number of people have pointed out that in the region of Cydonia on Mars, where you can find the face, there appear to be what look like pyramid-type structures very close by. And the fact that in some of the photographs, the face itself, as it sort of peers upwards from the planet, has this sort of sphinx-like appearance. You know, when you put sphinx plus pyramids, you know, inevitably draws an analogy with what we see in Egypt, you know, in Cairo. In other words, this has sort of given rise to the theories, well, is it possible that some of these stories of ancient astronauts coming down and influencing or even outright building some of these massive ancient structures, you know, these multi-tonned cities and walls, et cetera, could whoever built them here on Earth or helped build them here on Earth have been somehow directly linked with whoever built the face on Mars and the pyramids on Mars, if indeed, you know, they are artificial and they're not just a case of, you know, they look strange, but they're actually not. You know, this is an area that's been the subject of, like, endless research and debate in the last few years. And people like Richard Hoagland, you know, have written sort of full-length books on it. Matt Tonis, who we mentioned earlier, he addressed it very deeply in his 2004 book, After the Martian Apocalypse, which, again, you know, sort of drew upon photographs and imagery of sort of weird formations on Mars. And, you know, I include one in the book also, which looks, you know, again, people can put it down to like seeing faces in clouds, but it kind of does look like a side profile of an Egyptian woman, you know, with sort of the classic headdress, etc. And what's weird is that there are a number of stories relative to the face on Mars that suggest maybe somebody in government possibly knew about it long before the mid-1970s photograph surfaced from NASA. I mean, for example, one of the people who we have to look at is Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby, I mean, I don't know anything about comic books. I don't read them. But even I know that Jack Kirby was, you know, one of the most famous comic book artists of all time. He was also someone who was actually involved in a couple of CIA PSYOP programs in the 70s.
And how so? I want to hear this, because Jack Kirby is probably one of the most famous comic book artists. He did a lot of the Marvel comic book characters like Captain America and the Avengers. And by the way, that was not his real name. He was born Jacob Kurtzberg. So when you looked up information about Jack Kirby, did you check Jacob Kurtzberg?
Probably not, no. But, I mean, the thing is, with Jack Kirby, one of the things he was involved in, you'll remember when the Iranian hostage crisis was on in 1979/1980, a lot of Americans who worked at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, you know, they were imprisoned there, basically. They couldn't get out. You know, for all intents and purposes, the Iranians were holding them hostage. Well, what happened was that when the Iranians commandeered the American embassy, a handful of embassy personnel managed to escape, and they made their way to the Canadian embassy. And, of course, you know, Canada wasn't involved in a quarrel with the Iranians, so there was no big deal. But a plan was then created to try and smuggle out these sort of six or seven people back to the U.S. And it was done under the guise of that they were actually Canadian filmmakers in Tehran to make a sci-fi movie, which, you know, Tehran, Iran would be the ideal setting, and it would have all sorts of references to Middle Eastern religions, etc. You know, it'd be a good cover. And Jack Kirby actually provided artwork that helped sort of lend credence to the idea, you know, that it was a film crew. You know, they were like storyboard artwork that he did for the CIA. You know, there are a couple of things like that. And the reason I mention this is because people have said that the government knew about the face on Mars long before the mid-70s. Now, back in the late 1950s, Jack Kirby wrote a three-part sci-fi story, a comic book three-part story, the second of which was called The Face on Mars. And it involves a group of astronauts going to Mars and finding this huge carved head on the surface of Mars, which one of them enters through the eye sockets and finds this sort of huge sprawling city inside. And there are other stories. I mean, you mentioned Otto Binder. He actually wrote a novel in the early 70s, which also focused on pyramids on Mars. Otto Binder was friends with Willy Ley. You know, Willy Ley has a deep background and connection to the whole German scientists, rocket scientists of the Second World War. We also have a kids' series of the early 50s, Tom Corbett, which was basically like a, you know, he's an adventurous astronaut who would fly around the solar system, you know.
He was basically like a cadet.
Yeah,
Tom
like a
Corbett, space cadet.
Yeah.
There was a TV show, and it was based on some juvenile novels of the period.
Yeah, that's right. And what's interesting is that in one of those stories, it basically the theme of it is pyramids, carved faces, trips to Mars, etc., etc. I mean, various people were actually involved in sort of the at a consultancy level with the program, who again could be traced back to German rocket programs, you know, with scientists brought over from Germany. So, in other words, you know, we have these different strands of stories that all seem to sort of preempt, if you like, the official discovery of the face on Mars in 1975. And we find people involved in these earlier stories having links to officialdom, like Willy Ley and like Jack Kirby. Now,
so the intimation here is that they wrote these stories to what? Prepare us for these possibilities?
Well, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is all these stories date from the 50s, even the Jack Kirby one. That was the latest one. You know, the theory is that possibly somebody wanted to subtly prepare people for the idea that there was life on Mars, or there had been, and that there was evidence in the form of vastly old structures. That's the thing that runs through all these stories.
The Dead Seas of Barsoom we're talking about here with Nick Redfern. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Did you know that 50% of heart attacks are brought on by infections? Did you know that hospitals are breeding grounds for antibiotic-resistant bugs like MRSA? The environment is infected with parasites, and the mild winter means ticks with Lyme disease, mosquitoes with West Nile virus, and cold and flu viruses will be on the rise. Protect yourself with Nature's Natural Antiparasitic, Antiviral, Antifungal, Antibiotic, Allicin, the Heart of Garlic. Get concentrated protection with Ali-C and Ali-Van from AffinityHealthProducts.com. One capsule of Ali-C equals 40 cloves of garlic or 100 garlic pills. With no garlic breath, Ali-Ban has Allicin in spray, liquid, and cream. cream forms with three times more strength than leading brands and cost less. Go to AffinityHealthProducts.com, spelled AffinityHealthProducts.com, healthproducts.com, or call 877-888-7126. That's 877-888-7126. Protect yourself with Ally C or Ally Van from AffinityHealthProducts.com.
Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items. Supreme customer service. Very low shipping and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices, and CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring up on the internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Use coupon code GCN at checkout, and CampingSurvival.com will take 5% off your order. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born of preparation.
We want to know, how do you use WebEx?
I live in my car, sometimes a rental car. Every day, I find a nice, quiet place to pull over and meet a client through WebEx, face-to-face on my smartphone. This is the way to do business.
The new free version of WebEx Meetings lets you take your office anywhere, your desktop, laptop, or mobile device. Get your free WebEx Meetings basic account now at WebEx.com. WebEx from Cisco. WEBEX.com. WebEx.com.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Nick Redfern is author of a book called The Pyramids and the Pentagon. And we've gone to Mars here, of course. We started earlier talking about John Carter, or John Carter of Mars. And it's a movie, of course, that didn't do that well. Disney took a huge loss on that, like a $200 million bath. And I hope that people will buy the DVD or watch it. Yeah. And we were talking here about some of the concepts being written by novelists, comic book artists that the government was toying with. But in the end, is there anything about the face on Mars or pyramids on Mars that we should take real seriously?
Well, I mean, I think we should take seriously the fact that we have what looks, you know, not everybody agrees, of course, but what we have is a face or something that looks like a carved face with pyramid-type structures not far away. We have stories going back to the 50s, even titled The Face on Mars, where the person or people in question had links back to the intelligence world. Now, does that mean something? Does it mean nothing? Does it mean everything? The answer is we don't know. But for me, the worst thing we could do is to ignore these strands and threads. And that's, you know, that's why I encourage research into this area. Not because I'm fully convinced it's going to be vindicated, or it's going to be, you know, just totally blown out the water if we go there and it really is just an old rock. That's
where did you come down on a breakaway civilization scenario that we've developed? At least rudimentary interplanetary craft. We've already been to Mars, for instance. Richard Dolan has been touting this whole idea of a breakaway civilization lately. David Childress kind of sort of hints around sometimes that he thinks maybe there is a secret space program and that we've been a lot more places than we admit. Where do you come down on that? Do you see any evidence of this?
Well, I mean, I don't know as I agree that I would go as far as to say there's a breakaway civilization, but I think there are enough strands to suggest elements of something like a secret, probably military rather than NASA, space program of some sort. I mean, I'll give you a few examples. If we look at the, you know, the U.S. space program as it is today, you know, it's pretty much in a pretty poor state, you know. if we want to send, America wants to send astronauts into space, they've pretty much just got to plead with the Russians, you know, please will you send one of our guys up with yours, you know, and don't you know the Russians just love that? And people say, well, you know, how could we have fallen back so far and it's all just gone to ruin after all the legendary, you know, manned missions to the moon, etc.? Well, the more likely scenario in my mind is that that wouldn't be allowed to happen. Now, NASA, you know, primarily, although it's an agency of government, primarily it's involved in space exploration, but, you know, the space shuttle missions did launch spy satellites to the military and the intelligence community. But we hear rumors and stories suggesting, you know, the military may have its own secret space program, maybe one that NASA knows nothing about. Now, if that is the case, you know, there's no way they can be launching the equivalent of Saturn rockets into space or even the space shuttle, because everybody would see these huge engines, you know, roaring as the rocket goes up. People would be thinking, what on earth is that? You know, why weren't we told about that mission? So, in other words, the technology would have to be so advanced that, you know, they could launch a small craft, you know, say midnight in relative silence, and it just, you know, it leaves the Earth's atmosphere, nobody knows. So it clearly wouldn't be working by chemical propellants, etc. It would be highly advanced technologies. Now, this sort of brings us back to people like Gary McKinnon, you know, the British computer hacker, who said that when he was sort of doing his hacking activities, he claimed to have come across this list of military personnel that was basically connected with space missions, and they were described as non-terrestrial officers, you know, the whole ream of personnel. Non-terrestrial officers, you know, however you term it or say it, it kind of sounds like personnel working off the planet, you know, because they were listed by name. We're not talking about non-terrestrial officers in the sense of being some alien military force. You know, it was like Colonel this or, you know, Admiral that.
Does he have the names written out that we can actually look up these people and see
if
they exist?
No, I think as far as I can recall.
Yeah, I think he just saw it. He said there was 150-something, 155 names.
Yeah, and I mean, if you Google non-terrestrial officers, you come back to what McKinnon said. In other words, you know, you don't find it splashed all over NASA's website or the Pentagon site, and it means something else. You know, it's like if it's a real term, it hasn't reached the public domain or the internet other than via McKinnon. But, you know, things like that, some of the stuff Rich Dolan's pulled up, you know, Richard's written a couple of good articles about this whole issue. Things like this lead me to believe that, while I don't think, you know, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't think there are, you know, vast human civilizations beyond Mars and the Moon and everywhere else just in case things go belly up here. I wouldn't be at all surprised if advanced technologies, you know, are far more advanced than we think, and that there may well have been missions, you know. Maybe there have been clandestine missions to the Moon and Mars, and maybe that explains the almost like a determined push to deny there is anything on Mars, you know. It's like if nobody can go there, what's the fuss, you know.
Well, the other question I would have about that whenever we raise the possibility of the secret space program, what about advanced weaponry? And if we have advanced weaponry, why don't we use that threat to basically stop all the Mideast nonsense?
Well, you know, I think, again, a lot of it is dependent on who's got the weaponry. You know, is it the military as a whole? Is it sort of, you know, covert groups that are following their own sort of agendas? You know, to what extent does the government not want to end war but wants to perpetuate it? It's like the old adage, you know, that war increases the economy. You know,
who are the biggest arms dealers?
Yeah, that's like an unfortunate fact that, you know, you go to war and it, to an extent it builds the economy, but, you know, when it got to the extent that, you know, the money starts to be siphoned off from other programs, that's when it gets problematic. But in terms of creating new jobs, things like that, money at war is where it's at. So, you know, I mean, studies have been done, this whole idea of, you know, would it be economically feasible for the planet to live in peace? You know, and it sounds crazy that people would even want something other than that. But, you know, these sort of crazy people who say, no, we've got to have a state of war because it actually, in the long run, helps. You know, they're insane.
Yes, insane irony.
Yeah, it's just craziness. But that does offer a viable reason as to why highly advanced weaponry that could, you know, even if they're just used at a localized level as a demonstration, could end warfare overnight. You know, it's like, if you don't stop, this is what we're going to use on you. You know, in the same way Japan was threatened at the end of the Second World War, but they, you know, they just carried on, and then what happened was the systematic obliteration of Japan began, and then when two cities were destroyed, Japan panicked and said, okay, enough's enough, we'll surrender.
We show them the advanced weaponry. Now it's just drones.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, today you could unleash something possibly and, you know, just show it to people, just do one demonstration. It's like, hey, stop. And that could be done. But there are reasons, certain people, politics, economics, they don't want that done.
Now, can we think then that the possibility that advanced alien technology has been funneled into private industry or the military, and that's what we're talking about here?
Well, I mean, that could be the case. I mean, sort of the perfect example of that is people like Philip Corso, you know, the Roswell story about seeding alien technology. I don't dispute that as a possibility, and certainly that would be the logical thing to do because, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily realize that, you know, the military, when it's developing new weapons, it's not always done by army scientists. You know, they contract work out to different companies, you know, to build the tanks for them or the aircraft. You know, the tanks aren't built in some Pentagon factory. You know, they're built by a company that makes them for them. So in that sense, it would make sense for alien technology to be farmed out. But, you know, I kind of view that as a little bit simplistic. You know, if you're talking about technology so advanced it was constructed on another world, you know, by beings that are vastly different from us and the concepts involved may be so far out, you know, could we really have achieved the sort of advances that Corso claimed in such a short period of time? You know, it's like we get hold of the Roswell debris and within a couple of years, you know, we've got highly advanced computers, night vision equipment, fiber optics, and we've just suddenly out of nowhere, you know, deciphered this technology that is vastly advanced of us.
Well, you there's know, another possibility, like, too, which I'd like to present. But first we have Nick Redfern. The book is called The Pyramids and the Pentagon with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Ho, ho.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain, not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid, proven plant protection, guaranteed or your money back.
All whey protein powders are not created equal. Fresh liquid whey has been used for hundreds of years to restore health to the sick and youth to the aging. Why is it that no one reports these benefits from today's whey protein powders? It is because they are all processed with heat or chemicals which damages them, making them a burden for your body and making it more likely to cause allergies. One World Whey's True Cool process retains all the powerful properties of fresh raw whey in a concentrated powder. One World Whey is speeding up the body's ability to get healthy, and it is replacing the need for many other supplements. To learn how One World Way may help you with fat loss, the elimination of inflammation and pain, detoxification of heavy metals, intestinal health, brain function, and increases in strength, energy, and muscle size, call 888-988-3325. Mention coupon code KNOCKOUT and you'll receive a free tube of Knockout Pain Cream with your order, which eliminates soft tissue pain in 10 minutes for 90% of users. Call 888-988-3325 or visit OneWorldWay.com. That's OneWorld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Emergency Essentials has Mountain House deals in June. Going on now. Emergency Essentials, the 24-year leader in emergency preparedness supplies, does it again with up to 25% off Mountain House foods. Don't miss these savings. All Mountain House number 10 cans are 20 to 25% off during the month of June only at BePrepared.com. Mountain House foods has superior taste and a scientifically proven 25-year shelf life because they start with fresh or frozen foods, then cook, prepare, and finally freeze-dry them. All the goodness, flavor, and taste are locked in as if handmade from scratch. Mountain House, the same great meals enjoyed by campers and outdoorsmen the world over. Hurry, now through June 30th. Call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and the BePrepared.com low price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
I don't want to forget this anniversary, where Kenneth Arnold, on June 24th, 1947, saw nine objects over Mount Rainier in the state of Washington. 65 years later, we still don't know much more about what UFOs are. We have Nick Redfern, and the book is The Pyramids and the Pentagon from New Page Books.
Okay.
And we got into a little foray here into advanced technology. Part of it, of course, is that if we did recover a craft at Roswell or even at Aztec, New Mexico, how would we define or discern the advanced technology? It's like taking the world of Edgar Rice Burroughs in 1912 and handing Ed my iPhone, say, figure it out, man. And would it be that way? Or would some of the more obvious elements of their technology jumpstart stuff we've already been working on? Well, we're already working on some things, and maybe a few of these tidbits will help us, but the rest we haven't figured out in the next 70 years.
No, I don't dispute that as a possibility, and it would be logical. The only thing I kind of question in this scenario is the speed with which we reportedly did it. You know, not that we achieved it, but that in some cases, you know, things were kick-started, modified, and, you know, taken to the whole next level in pretty much no time at all.
We don't know the real history. We don't know if they manipulated the history. Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, no, we don't know. You know, that's one of the problems. We got some impression.
I disagree. The Bell Lab story and the transistor and development of some of those early technologies, lasers, for instance, it's pretty famous in science. I mean, we're talking many patents, hundreds of patents, and there's a ton of documentation that's a paper trail for all these inventions and developments. So yeah, I personally find it very difficult to believe that the Corso scenario, you know, is real at face value. There's too much of a paper trail.
No, you're right. I mean, that's one of the big criticisms I have about the Corso story isn't the scenario that he portrays, but it is the fact that you're quite right, that a lot of the technology he's talking about in various forms already existed, you know, and I, for me at least, that's an important factor. And yes, it could have helped some of our programs if they're already in place, but isn't it kind of a little bit beyond coincidence that supposedly, you know, we were already developing transistors, already developing computers, already developing lasers, and suddenly all of these different things we're inventing, a slightly more advanced version of them falls into our lap. You know, that to me kind of is too much of a perfect picture.
Warren, the whole book was just an attempt at disinformation. Let's move to one more topic before we split, and that is crop circles. Okay, so crop circles, what would the Pentagon know or care about crop circles?
Well, actually, that's a weird one because it covers several strands. I mean, people have said, you know, that there have been a lot of stories about government interest in crop circles over the years, but you know, we never got any proof of it. But that's actually not true. You know, you just got to know where to look. I mean, one of the things I mentioned in the book is I got hold of a whole bunch of files on crop circles from the Second World War, and from none other than MI5, which is the British equivalent of the FBI. It's like the British Domestic Intelligence Gathering Agency. Basically, what happened was that in the Second World War, Allied pilots flying over Germany, or to bomb Germany, flying over Europe, reported seeing these huge formations in fields, not just like straightforward circles, but, you know, intricate patterns like today's pictograms. And the first thought was, quite naturally back then, it's got to be like messages for German fighter pilots or bomber pilots, you know, this weird formation. They look it up in their book and it means approach London from the northwest at 11 o'clock and bomb Buckingham Palace or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. That's, which makes sense, you know, that's what that they would think of something like that. But what's interesting is the fact that these were crop circles back in the 40s, and military intelligence was secretly looking at them. And the files have now been declassified, and I, you know, I reproduce quite a few of them in the book. But further down the line, with the Freedom of Information Act, one of the things that I mention is how in the 1990s, because of me, I reproduce the documents in the book, is a reference to how government personnel, military agents, were actually in attendance at Electron crop circles in Germany in 1993, at which a conference or a lecture that basically sort of addressed all the different theories. You know, are they alien? Are they man-made? Is it something to do with the planet itself? But beyond that, the bigger story that I talk about in the book is a very weird one where NSA analysts were looking at into a rumor. And granted, you know, I point out in the book it was a rumor that there was a tie-in between the crop circle phenomenon, the whole December 2012 phenomenon that was of concern from a national security perspective. Now, it wasn't from the perspective of the NSA somehow stumbled upon information, you know, that, yes, 2012 is going to be the end of all things or some radical shake-up, and it was linked with crop circles and they knew it and they were trying to hide the truth. It was actually far more down-to-earth but much weirder. The NSA had heard a story that there were sort of radicals, like Islamic radicals, who had secretly hired human crop circle makers to make formations of like a 2012 apocalyptic scenario or theme to sort of provoke anxiety in the British public. Because, you know, every year crop circles appear all over Britain, predominantly in the county of Wiltshire, and they get splashed all across the newspapers. And if you type in 2012 plus English crop circle, you'll find countless examples where not only were they reported all across the British media, but the British media talked specifically about this doomsday scenario in the fields. And so, in other words, it did create anxiety. You know, and people said, well, maybe it was aliens, maybe it was human circle makers just having a joke. But the NSA followed up this lead, which, whether it went anywhere, we don't really know. But the lead was that radicals were sort of trying to exploit the crop circle phenomenon to create fear and anxiety. You know, whether it's true, you know, it's sort of a very bizarre theory. But it demonstrates, again, another link between the military or the intelligence community and the ancient past with the Mayans, but for a very different reason, you know, that goes beyond weapons testing or whatever, but it's still connected to the theme of the book.
Yeah, it's the Collins elite.
They're responsible. The Collins elite did everything.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm sure you're joking there, but I wouldn't say that officially or specifically, because the Collins elite was actually a fairly small body of people, but they influenced a lot of people. They didn't have much funding. They apparently were always complaining about not having enough money.
Well, it's just that whole doomsday sort of, you know, negative vibe. But one thing that has always struck me over the years was something that the newly appointed right-hand man to Lawrence Rockefeller, Henry Diamond, quite a high-powered lawyer, asked me in a phone conversation, because he was getting to know some of Lawrence's more eccentric pursuits and interests. And he, in a moment of candor, he asked me if I could tell him why Lawrence was so interested in crop circles. He says, why is he so interested in these things? And then he made the very curious aside. You and I both know this is probably British intelligence doing this from space. And, of course, my comment was, we do. And basically, I said, what about atmospheric lensing, this and that? You know, how would they do it? And he says, oh, they figured all that out. And the intimation was basically, it's like guys with nothing better to do with Etch-a-Sketches creating crop circles in fields, which I you know, I'm not sure what to make of that. But the very fact that he said that in a pretty sincere, innocent-sounding voice, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
Wow. What fun this has been. So many mysteries in this book. So many we didn't have time to cover, but maybe we'll revisit them soon. So, Nick, tell us quickly about the book.
Again, it's called The Pyramids of the Pentagon. It's basically a study of how military, government, and intelligence agencies since the end of the Second World War in the U.S. and Germany in the Second World War, and also Britain with Stonehenge, have sort of pursued ancient mysteries, everything from Stonehenge to the pyramids, the Dead Sea Scrolls, Noah's Ark, all sorts of things like the Ark of the Covenant, with a view to sort of weaponizing these ancient technologies and fantastic constructions, weaponizing them for the present and the future, if they're able to. So it's like a real-life kind of Indiana Jones-type scenario, using Freedom of Information documents and on-the-record interviews and things like that.
A real fun book, a real great read, a real page-turner from Nick Redfern. Our friend Chris O'Brien has his new version of OurStrangePlanet.com that's in the final stages of perfection, but now live for everyone's attention. We're live at the Paracast on Twitter, and next week we'll be talking to James Fox, who's one of the participants of a TV show called Chasing UFOs from the National Geographic Channel. Nick Redfern, thank you for joining us this week on the Paracast.
All right, thanks, guys.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most of the soils that we grow our crops on here in the United States and across the industrialized world are almost completely depleted of almost all of the key minerals and trace elements that our bodies need to rebuild themselves, fight off cancer, and be healthy. I then searched out the best vitamin and mineral company out there and discovered Youngevity. The Youngevity products are designed to give you the real nutrition you need, and once you've got that, you don't have to eat as much to be satisfied. I've lost 37 pounds in 2 months, simply getting the vitamins and minerals I need. Check it out for yourself. It's incredible. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com today and order your first canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Complete Multivitamin Mineral Complex Dietary Supplement. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.